Good afternoon, Mr. Zembel.
Have we unmuted?
Hey, we just did.
Okay. Okay.
Go down to the screen here.
No.
Help me.
Here? Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to give a brief presentation on our relationship with the Santa Ana Watershed Association and how it came to be and why we have an agreement with them. It's been quite some time since issues with SAWA have been brought to the board. And so they're
okay. Do you see where it says screen share? Right there. Okay. Where's the screen up here is awful. Is that it? That's not. Yeah.
Okay. You want me to give that one?
Does it say solve? Okay.
I can't see.
Right there?
No, down.
Oh, okay. All right.
Hey, we're there.
Okay, hold on. Let me get rid of all this stuff.
So after having done this for 3 years, I'm finally getting the hang of it.
All right.
And you thought controlling water was difficult.
Is that showing up now?
Okay, Dick.
Almost in time, Andre. In fact, stand next to me, would you? Okay, so I might really need some help here. So again, it's been a long time. We've had a long-standing relationship with this organization. Actually, OCWD was instrumental in founding SAWA. The Santa Ana Watershed Association is a nonprofit. They've been working on arundo control and wildlife management in the Santa Ana watershed since about the year 2000, slightly before actually. And their charter is environmental. It's to restore the natural functions of the river, but integrating people value as well. So people plus the environment. And, you know, the big thing for us is we have a number of commitments we've made by way of mitigation, particularly for water conservation, and SAWA is the organization that helps us fulfill those obligations in the watershed off our property. The makeup, SELVA is run by a 5-member board, of which an OCWD representative holds one of those positions. The other four are resource conservation districts, currently chaired by Rick Niegebauer. And then you can see the other representatives from the various, these are the four resource conservation districts that currently operate in our watershed. This all kind of started in terms of our commitment to the watershed outside our property actually before 1995, but in 1995, it was memorialized in an agreement amongst the Department of Interior, the Corps of Engineers, and the Orange County Water District. Before we signed this agreement, Bill Mills pulled me into his office and we conspired as to how to go about water conservation in Prado Basin in a way that could involve partners in the rest of the watershed as well, and whether or not there was a theme there that could get others on board. And that theme really turned out to be Arundo Donax, which I'll get into in a second here, that you probably know as Giant Reed. You've seen presentations recently, I think, on our water conservation program, particularly in relationship to what we're trying to do now with forecast-informed reservoir operations, where the issue with water conservation, besides putting habitat underwater from the perspective of some of the agencies, that's an issue. But the other issue is getting rid of that water if we've got another giant storm coming. And so being able to forecast out of flood control danger is really what that FIRO program is all about. So we're looking now at being able to go to elevation 505 in the basin, which gives us a pool of 20,000 acre feet, which then can be measured out to the lower river and percolated. In the future, we're looking at even going higher. So it was on the shoulders of Arundo Donax control, Giant Reed control, that we partnered with the Department of Interior, the Corps, the Fish and Wildlife Service, and spread our influence outside of our normal place of business up above the Prado Basin. We focused first in the Prado Basin with the Nature Conservancy when we initially made these commitments back in the 90s. They really broke the ground on trying to determine how to control this stuff and what was required and what happens once you get rid of 100 acres of Arundo. What does that look like? Arundo was a good target for watershed work in terms of a water agency's ability to sell a program, because there's something for almost everybody to hate about Giant Reed. It carries fire, it outcompetes the native forests, the riparian habitat. It grows extremely quickly. It consumes vast quantities of water. Very flammable, responsible for firestorms on the river in the past, and most recently, 1,000 plus acres fires in the Prado Basin itself. And it sprouts after that kind of disturbance. So no value to wildlife. Ideal structure for homeless camps. They actually make houses thatching the branches together, and clogs waterways, interfering with water quality and the movement of water. It's incredible how thickly this stuff can grow. It gets so thick that you can't move through it even trying to press sideways. And this is a shot in the Prado Basin of staff after the day laborers came in with machetes and cut us a tunnel from one part of the Prado Basin to another. Grows really fast. This is the pheasant field out in Prado Basin. This picture was taken 2 weeks after, or 10 days after the field was mowed, and some of the Arundo is back over 2-3 feet high already. And this is just to show you, so Sava got involved in a big way in 2000, a little earlier in that in actuality, but by 2013, this organization had projects going on literally on every corner of the watershed. And understand that OCWD did put funding into this program initially, but the $40, $50 million that has been spent to date on Arundo control is largely grant money and funding from other agencies, not OCWDs. I also put this slide up to show the complicated nature of Arundo control in terms of keeping track of what's been done and what still needs to be done. It sprouts and grows so quickly that you can remove 100 acres, but you got to stay on it for a while or that will be back before you know it. But the Sawa's work has been all over the watershed. And today I can say that literally every sprig of Arundo that grows in the Santa Ana River watershed has been touched by somebody and taken out. It's not like the problem is gone because it isn't. The stuff persists incredibly. Huge headway has been made. So here is up in San Bernardino County, a power line crossing where there were acres and acres of Arundo. The Arundo was taken out and the native forest came back. And one of the cornerstone species of this riparian forest habitat that was impacted along with people by the proliferation of giant reed throughout the watershed were riparian birds, particularly one that's listed as endangered. The little yellow dots that you see, this is a map of the Prado Basin in the center. The little yellow dots you see in the Prado Basin there represent a location of a territorial endangered least Bellsvireo back in 1983, observed by yours truly when I wore a Fish and Wildlife Service hat. And I want you to contrast that with what you see in 2022. Each of those dots is what we had in the spring of last year. We have virtually recovered the endangered least Bellsvireo on the Santa Ana watershed. In fact, on the shoulders of our work primarily, but work that's done on Camp Pendleton and a few other San Diego streams, the last time there was a review of least Bellsvireo status, it was recommended it be downgraded to threatened. All we need is 9 other watersheds to catch up with what's going on in the Santa Ana, and we'll have this little guy delisted one of these days. So currently over 2,000 territories outside the Prado Basin and 600 or so inside Prado. So the vireo occupies this habitat that comes after Arundo is gone, and we've managed for the vireo and getting rid of Arundo, and that in tandem is recovering this whole riparian suite of species. On top of that, you've seen the economic value represented in what water conservation behind Prado Dam it gets us. But less broadcast is the economic value of getting rid of giant reed. And this is a very conservative number. The 3¾ acre feet per acre per year of giant reed removed is basically a conservative estimate of the amount of water above and beyond native habitat that giant reed consumes on an average annual basis. And that's what these numbers are based upon. 8,500 acres of Arundo approximately have been taken out of the Santa Ana watershed. A little over 5,000 of those acres by the Santa Ana Watershed Association in partnership with us. You authorized in 2015 work on 400 acres in the Prado Basin, and that has been taken out and is still being maintained. More recently, there's been Prop 84, the Riverside County Parks and Open Space has a program. There's a number of entities working on Arundo, and that's where this 8,500 acre estimate of Arundo removed comes from. At any rate, SAWA is the 501c3 we formed to deal with issues like Arundo in the upper watershed. We've had a standing agreement with them for 10 years. That original agreement had a lot to do with a trust fund where they were holding a bunch of our money, past mitigation dollars that subsequently has dried up. It's time to redo the language in the agreement. And in order to get the wording right for the new agreement and whatnot, this snuck up on us. We're asking for a 1 year, just live for another year under the old agreement while we work out the new one. And if there's any questions.
So really a fairly simple recommendation. However, we wanted to give a little bit of an overview, particularly for the newer directors, as far as what we're doing behind Prado and the impact of SAWA and what they actually do for a living, if you will.
Thank you. I especially appreciated the exhibits that you had there, some of the images. Very interesting. I know I looked up Arundo, and back in 2012, there were stories out as to whether giant reed was going to be the next miracle plant or whether it would be the next kudzu. Right? Yeah, what was it they had in mind? I didn't have a chance to read in the detail. What did they see beneficial in Arundo back then? Do you recall?
Green waste energy, you know, the fodder for animals. Actually, some of the original plantings of Arundo in California were to stabilize flood control levees. They're thinking the roots would hold the sediment in and whatnot. And the stuff had just taken over in California. Many rivers and streams deal with this as well.
Any other questions? Yes. Director.
Station. But it's listed as a species.
I'm sorry. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I know. And how much do you think there is right now remaining?
1,500.
That's great. I've noticed that you had. And I was reading the Bureau of Preliminary Viability Assessment report saying that
it varies. They start showing up in March most years, and then by March. April they're nesting. Yeah,
right.
I'm sorry,
for an 8-week protocol period to get I did something where they cut it about 8 times, I believe, to the monitoring developing area.
Yeah,
8 separate net type area.
If you want to build anything. Well, the resource conservation districts that you have on the association now, have they been the same the entire time?
No, it's, you know, it's 20-year history. There's been a lot of change. There used to be an East Valley Resource Conservation District that was found to be redundant, and there were some other issues. And so now there's an Inland Empire Resource Conservation District. It covers the entire San Bernardino area. Oh. Where there used to be two. Now there's only one. And the players change hands. Resource conservation districts are interesting. I mean, literally, by being involved in this program, a couple of these RCDs got really big and powerful and made a lot of money on the shoulders of Arunda Control. We kind of taught them, you know, what... If you want to be a ruthless business person, here's how you go about it and make a bunch of money. And they've done really, really well for themselves. But they still partner on the SAWA board and allow SAWA to do the work that we need them to do.
So what are some of the key things that you think would be the mission in the future for this association?
Oh, just stay the course. The Arunda Control is the heart of this thing. This all started when Seven Oaks Dam was going in, and the Army Corps of Engineers had a plan to grow a bunch of trees right in the low flow below the dam. They were going to spend $1.5 million on that because they couldn't find any other land for mitigation. And that's when we stepped up to them and said, no, let's tackle this Arundo issue and use that as seed money. And that's really what the first funding for Arundo Control in the watershed happened. And it's just gone on since from there. I've lost myself in thought. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. But Arundo Control is the main thing, is a key mission for Arundo the association.
Is the, yep. To biologists out there watching the bird populations. Well, the bird populations are telling you that habitat has come back. The Arundo is truly gone. And so that they're kind of the proof that you've done this conversion that you wanted to. But having the people out there that are doing that work, the other thing these people do is they're walking every square inch of the watershed, and they're taking GPS locations on Arundo where it's come up and whatnot, reporting that back so that you can actually get rid of every last piece of it.
Okay, thank you. And with FIRO, have you been engaged in the discussions, the decisions about what to do for future work for our watershed? The association working with FIRO?
Yeah. FIRO, understand, is very Prado-centric. And so, yes, but we certainly participate in those talks and discussions and have some ideas about how to take advantage of water at higher elevation. The fear the agencies have had is someday, some years, there's going to be 2 or 3 wet years in a row, and Prado's going to turn into this swamp, and everything in the lower elevation is going to die because there's water there for so long.
Water logging, yeah.
And our point is, look at what's happening with the weather. Look at what's happening with the low flow. How often do we have water to even get to these higher elevations? When we do have water, let's go as high as we can with that water and flood irrigate. Flood irrigation is what gave us the forest in the first place. Let's take advantage of that and try to grow the forest at the higher elevations as well as we can when we do have the water. So we're trying to turn this thing on its head so that we are able to go higher.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, Madam Mayor, Director here. Go ahead.
So thank you. I'm a new director. And so sitting here listening to you share this, I really appreciate it. And the work that it seems like a lot of work is being done. And so I really appreciate it. So thank you
so much.
Thank you. And I'll support the recommendation.
Well, very good presentation. Appreciated that very much as well. I see Director Bilodeau.
A couple of questions. So this association, is that like an executive director?
It does.
And that's like paid staff?
Yes. Who's the executive director? Brian Brady.
Oh, IWD?
Yeah.
He's a good guy. I didn't know that.
I think he's actually, or was a board member of the San Diego Water Authority also. I believe he lives down in Fallbrook area now. But he was with IRWD.
And they're not doing mass dosing anymore, are they? Correct. Say.
No, the major thing is getting the bulk of the biomass removed and taken out. And from there, there's a lot of tools. You know, you can remove balls, there's all kinds of things you can do to try to keep it from coming back in. You can't just cut it and leave it because it's like mowing your front yard. It is a grass, even though it's a woody. And so there are situations where they do still use chemical.
Because it's no secret to you, I've said this a million times. I don't think we should be aging in those activities because there's so much liability now with the use of that glyphosate. Is that what it is?
Yes.
So, I mean, there's so much liability with that now. I just think we should shy away from any funding of the use of that.
And that's the way we have directed staff as well. That's not something that's in our any longer in our toolbox.
Okay, perfect. Thanks.
Sure.
What percent of Savo's activity is exclusivity property versus the other watershed non-exempt property?
What percentage?
Yes.
Let's see, 12,000 acres versus maybe 20%, something like that. So understand the relationship with SAWA is one where when they have the wherewithal, the Corps funds their watershed wide vireo work, which we get partial credit for. We founded this organization, part of what keeps it running. With that funding, they take care of some of what are our responsibilities, like the cowbird trapping we're supposed to do in the Prado Basin. Our staff don't do that anymore. SAWA does. But in exchange for that, we store the traps for them. We help them fix the traps and that kind of a thing. So I don't know if that gets it.
The 20%, we're about 20% of there.
It very, very roughly speaking, it's hard to do it that way. We have projects outside our boundaries that we're supposed to be taking care of for one permit reason or another, and they're the ones that actually do that for us. Percentage wise, 20-ish, that might be a little high.
That leads to another question: what projects do we have outside our boundaries? I didn't know. I would all be within a be on our own property. Why do we have projects outside of our area?
Well, we were told by California Department of Fish and Wildlife as part of an agreement that protested our water rights application. An agreement was signed by a former GM that we were supposed to single-handedly recover the fish that's in the Santa Ana River. And there were a number of things we needed to do for the Santa Ana sucker. And we had a choice of doing that on our property just above Prado, but it didn't seem prudent to be attempting to grow threatened fish just above Prado with all the things we do down at Prado. So we chose instead a site way up the watershed that made more sense.
restored a little creek up there and have successfully established a breeding population.
It's
away from our property.
It's off site vacation.
Yes.
Thank you.
Are there any remote questions? One last question that I had. As Arundo gets mature, gets large, you talked about the root balls or root mass. They can get very substantial, right? It takes a lot of heavy work to excavate them.
Right? A stand that's older than 5 years, that with stems so thick, the size of this table area, would have a root ball underneath the size of a full-size van.
Thanks. I appreciate that. Thanks. All right. So with that, we will go to an informational item, an update on FIRO, forecast informed reservoir operations at Prado Dam.
And Mr. Chair, that was an action item, the last action item.
Oh, I'm sorry. If and pass it. Okay. We have a motion and a second. No other discussion. A roll call, please. Aye.
You know, I cannot hear it. Whoever is speaking.
Director Yeo?
Oh, yes. Thank you. Now I can hear you.
Director Rowe?
Yes.
Director Sheldon?
Yes.
Director Mespa?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, one last question on this item. It said there's going to be an agreement coming back next year.
Yes.
And that would be a completely new agreement, or as you read through this one, there's a lot of business terms and millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars going on, and we're spending a lot of money, so we'd be having a deal point on that. Would be very good to get as that progresses. Who is negotiating that agreement, and how does that come to be?
Well, I think as Dick pointed out in his presentation, there's a lot of what is now extraneous language in the existing agreement pertaining to there used to be a trust that was set up, so that language will come out. So the new agreement, we're hopeful, will streamline the entire process. Keep in mind, SAWA just acts as kind of a clearinghouse. If we get grant funding, we turn it over to them and then they do the work. So those are the type of changes I think that we believe need to be made with the existing agreement. It's somewhat outdated, if you will.
It's kind of an internal negotiation on the SAWA.
I think it'll maybe better explain the mechanism by which the funds come in and then are distributed on the projects.
Parties have this big, can they do it? Mm-hmm.
And we'll do that. We'll make sure that once the negotiations begin or the what we can do is bring to the committee or to the board the draft agreement once it's been established to get input. Yeah. So we'll do that. We'll
do all the.
Yeah. No. So we'll make sure that we bring a draft agreement to the board to get their input before finalizing the agreement. Yes.
Now on to the FIRO update.
Oh, thank you. Yes, we have an informational item on the FIRO program, and I believe Adam Hutchinson should be standing in back of me.
He's been ready.
Yeah. Okay, wonderful, Adam.
Okay, good afternoon. So I'd like to give an update on FIRO and where we are with that. We've been doing water conservation for a long time here at OCWD, and this slide here kind of gives you a sense of the history behind water conservation at Prado Dam. And the most recent update was in April 2021, where we got permission to hold water to 505 all year round before the seasonal elevation. And then the last line there is Firo. So Firo is really the next evolution, the next way to get even more water captured behind the dam using forecast-informed reservoir operations. But, you know, it's not simple. It's very complicated. There are a lot of different things we need to consider. Obviously, flood risk management is the primary purpose of the dam. So anything we do back there cannot degrade the capacity of the dam for flood risk management. But there's a lot of other factors we need to consider, you know, leaf-belled vireo that Dick mentioned, the habitat behind the dam, land use infrastructure, the release rate from the dam is also something that needs to be considered in terms of holding water and how quickly we can evacuate that pool. So these are all the different factors that are being looked at as a part of Firo. And so trying to find that optimal water level and reservoir management strategy that can really give it the win-win in all these different conditions. So what is forecast-informed reservoir operations? Well, it's really using enhanced weather forecasting and runoff tools that we have now. There's a lot of effort being put into understanding atmospheric rivers and where they land and how intense they are and how much rainfall they produce. So a tremendous knowledge base is being generated now throughout the state of California and the western U.S. So Firo really leverages that new information and new understanding. The original Firo effort was a pilot study at Lake Mendocino, done several years ago, and we are the second pilot study. And now there's just several others underway, and Firo is expanding rapidly throughout the state and even the other parts of the country. So it's a very stakeholder-driven process, which you need to have as all the complexity that I mentioned behind the dam. There's a lot of different stakeholders that have interest in what happened to Prado. And so Firo, this stakeholder, it's a very stakeholder-driven process, been very good to make sure everybody is in agreement as we move along. And so when you finally do implement it, everybody is on board with the approach that we're taking. So this kind of showed the updated schedule where we at, right, where we are right now. This actually started in 2017. So you don't see all the legwork that's been done to get to this point, but the preliminary viability assessment was published in 2021. And over the last couple of years, we've been doing the final viability assessment, which will be done this summer. And I have a little bit more information on that later. Now in parallel, we're also looking at the minor deviation to 508. And we're on track to have that in place by this fall. And the idea behind the minor deviation is to use Firo to exercise that additional 3 feet of storage and use the tools that we developed to really better understand the tools, see how they're working, see how Firo is operating, and make sure the core is comfortable with it, and just experiment with it, see how it works. So that's kind of where we're at right now. And so I'm sure this fall we'll come back with an update to the board on the final viability assessment results when we get there. So some of the preliminary viability assessment recommendations that were mentioned at a previous board meeting are the following listed on this page. And during the final viability assessment process that we're almost done with, we've completely addressed all of these recommendations. Of course, testing Firo through the deviation is something that will take place over the course of several years here starting this fall. So glad to say we did complete all those recommendations. So the final viability assessment is the draft is completed. I actually finished reviewing it yesterday. It's now going to be sent to outside experts to be peer reviewed. And then the final draft will be published later this summer. And the preliminary findings of that final viability assessment are some of them are pretty obvious that the more water you hold behind the dam, the more recharge we get. Yeah, it's pretty straightforward. Forecasting is improving our ability to operate the reservoir and not compromise flood risk management. But higher conservation pools obviously lead to increased periods of inundation. And so that's an area that's poorly understood and that we need to study carefully to make sure we understand the impacts. There's also benefit to higher water con behind Prado Dam because, you know, there's drier dry and wetter wet. So trying to find out what we really need to do in terms of management of habitat behind the dam to make this work. Now I'm going to give you a sneak preview here. These are the results of the modeling that we've done, showing the different elevation that we've modeled all the way up to elevation 520 and the amount of additional recharge per year that these elevations would give us. And so for the minor deviation of 508, that would on average give us another 2,000 acre feet a year of recharge. And then going all the way up to 520. 512 is probably going to be the sweet spot where we will recommend pursuing FIRO for the foreseeable future, given that the Corona Airport is at elevation 514. But there may be opportunity to go above 512 in the future. But for now, 512, so that's an additional 6,000 acre feet a year of recharge. So as I mentioned, we're going to go up to 508. That's in another 5,900 acre feet of storage behind the dam. And so we hope to have that in place by this fall. So that concludes my presentation. Be happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Any questions or comments from members of the committee? Director Elk.
Yes. I did meet the member advisory assessment. I took it on vacation. I think the theme was problematic. It was the second time that I'd like to take an opportunity to talk with John, maybe Mike, about some of the chapters 5 and 6, 5 on recommendations. Other issues that I addressed, but I don't think we should talk about before I'd like to expand further. From the 567, there happens to be a need off.
It's a whole team of experts. I mean, CW3E and has a whole team of people that wrote that report. So. He's a reviewer. He's not an author. His team is they authored many sections of the report. We took the lead in writing the environmental portion of the document. As far as the meteorology and hydrology, I was heavily involved in the groups and helping to steer those discussions and editing those sections.
That's good. 8 years ago, same project meetings. And saying the Mainstem project is completed, that's when the Corps of Engineers is going to be adopted.
Yeah, the governing document for the Corps, as you know, is the Water Control Plan and the Water Control Manual. So that's being updated as we speak. Their plan at the update, there's two updates. Update number one is scheduled to be done in August of 2024. That will include the new outflow of 30,000 CFS. But update number two, which will include FIRO, will begin after that Water Control Manual update number one is finished. Then we will start working with the Corps to implement FIRO as a permanent part of the Water Control Manual.
I think something that should see or and also sedimentation that was it said that 90% sediment. Santa River gets dropped out. And we have to, I think, be smart at managing the basin by knowing 37 spill, some disaster that the federal government will be that sediment on our behalf. This is something that we manage it better. Mm-hmm. So I think we should have a sediment vegetation program if we don't need to.
Yeah, we do, Director Lau. I would be happy to share those details with you.
Oh, yes, Director Sheldon.
Is there an additional cost for mitigation regarding environmental plant mitigation, habitat mitigation?
Yeah, you know, we have a very good relationship with Fish and Wildlife Service. It's really evolved over the years. I think we all understand that there's drier dries, wetter wets, and the opportunity to store water behind the dam is something that can have a lot of benefit to the environment. So the Fish and Wildlife Service have really gone to a more adaptive management approach. Rather than predefining mitigation, it's more about documenting the potential impact that water con has on vegetation, and coming back over several life cycles and evaluating what are the real impacts and addressing them at that point in time. And so I'm pretty confident that the impacts are going to be pretty minimal, but until we actually implement it and run through years like we just had this year with 505 for extended periods, we need to understand what those impacts are, if any, and go from there.
So they're going to allow for us to have that area be submerged. And typically they would require us to agree to some mitigation before that occurred, before that impact occurred. They're telling me they're going to allow us to ascertain what was the impact of that short term.
Yes. Yes.
And then go back and say what happened to that. And that's a very, very unique approach.
Yes.
That's good to hear.
Yeah.
Surprised to hear that. I don't know how they could legally do that. Just have to agree to the mitigation of the impact to the impact.
Yeah.
I think it's because of the mitigation that we've done in the past. And as Adam said, I mean, in Dick's presentation, it showed the vireo coming back, the 2000 colonies and the work that's been done. So, I think under this adaptive management concept, they do take that into consideration. Now, it's not to say that there won't be additional mitigation required, but we won't know that exactly at this time until things are finalized. I would have to check those figures. I thought it was, yeah, that over the 30 years. So we'll double check that. Three.
So because they're going to ascertain the impact after that's great, because I mean, the area becomes, I don't know, how long is that area? Would it be 2 months, 3 months?
Right. Yeah, the great point. Let me show you this graph here. Might help a little bit. This is a graph of the water level behind Prater Dam over the last 6 years, showing the buffer pool in the red line. We only get to the buffer pool half the time. So the modeling shows 50% of the years, you don't have enough water to fill the buffer pool. So there's really no flooding or anything to worry about. But the years you do have water, like this year, for example, you could have prolonged periods, but then next year could be dry and the habitat will restore and recover. So because of this alternating wet dry cycle, the inundation can be severe in the wettest year, but then it doesn't occur in the dry years and the habitat restores itself. So that's kind of how Prado operates. So there's not this long-term damage that never comes back.
So it's not the species, they're drowned, they're going
to no. Right.
Right. That's
good. Yeah.
Smart.
They're smart.
Charred fire. And 3 years, coastal stage was back.
Right.
To our chagrin. So,
right.
But it was,
right.
You wouldn't think the water would have been habitat and fine with it. And back. So that's good.
Yeah. It does.
I would like to add, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, the dollar amounts that we were talking about, there is a 65% federal cost share on those. So the district is not bearing the entire $3 million a year. As have I. Yeah, I tell you what we'll do. Yeah, absolutely. And we are bringing on a new director of planning and natural resources. As the committee may recall, Greg Woodside took a position at a different agency, and we're in the process of refilling that position. And I believe should have the new person on board on July the 5th. And this would fall under her department. So give her a couple months to come up to speed. I think what would be good to is to inform the board and just give an informational item on what we have done, what the past agreements have been with the Corps, what mitigation have we performed, what are we required to do, and be able to present that in one overall presentation. Because we do... Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Because we do have a tendency of bringing these things in bits and chunks as they occur. So, there may be a year go past or 18 months go past before issues come to the committee or come to the board. So I think having that refresher course and being able to explain what we've done, why we've done it, what the extent of the mitigation was, whether that mitigation sunsets, all those types of issues, and weigh that against the benefit also, because there is a cost benefit here, obviously. And so I think that I will make sure that is done once we onboard the new executive director of planning.
Starting off and scoping it, you have to have alternatives in the EIR, an alternative for this. And then I don't believe the board's It's not the board's role to be a part of that, but those alternatives are what triggers all these costs later on, and were sort of brought to us afterwards. And then here's the alternatives, and that everyone decided upon. So now here's your tab for these. So I don't know how you do that differently, but
I'd like to know in advance.
Yeah, so.
I just have one question. That's perfect. Sure. So. We had a lot of water this year, and they're predicting we're going to have a lot of water next year. How will that affect all?
Right. That's a great question. Those are the kind of study that we want to do. And to Director Rowe's point, we're trying to collect as much data on habitat health and extent, as well as sedimentation, so that every year that goes by, we can carefully document what impact do we see from the operation by Prado every year. And having consecutive wet years, there's definitely a different scenario. We want to understand that very clearly. So we're trying to gather as much information as we can to understand and be able to answer the kind of question.
The thing that will happen is we are pursuing, as Adam said, what's called a minor deviation with the Corps for FIRO, which would enable us, we're hopeful that we get that minor deviation prior to next winter, because that would allow us to go from 505 to 508. So we should have the ability, because of FIRO, with a minor deviation, to potentially gain an additional 6,000 acre feet of water next winter, assuming we get the rain and water levels go up to that point behind the dam. Mm-hmm.
I have no questions.
Okay. Well, Adam, thank you for the update. I, for one, am pleased that they're starting to understand that retaining more water in the environment is good for the environment, right?
Yes.
But anyway, thanks for the update.
Well, yeah, sure. I just want to think about it. I want to add, just for Valerie's benefit, mainly is that SOPA, which we are a member agency, we started a four-year pilot program to do cloud seeding in the Santa Ana watershed. And it was delayed from doing it this last year. We're going to start it in November. So we'll see. I expect that we'll get like a 15% increase in rainfall runoff because we're doing cloud seeding, and that'll increase the amount of yield in the watershed at a very low cost. So we'll see how that, it not being considered at all in FIRO, Thank you.
Well, thank you for that. That was an informational item. So what we'll do now is direct that items number 2 through 6 be agendized for our June 21st Board of Directors meeting. And are there any announcements or reports?
I would just like to, would you like those to be placed on the consent calendar?
Yes.
Or?
Sorry.
Okay.
Thank you for the clarification.
Well, I have something to report. Sure. On Monday, I attended the MODOC Operations and Planning Subcommittee, and in comments, it was pointed out that Metropolitan Water District has 100% state water project allocation this year, and they were thinking they're going to sock it away wherever they can, and they tend to look at storing water outside of the coastal area into basins that they control. And after going through that, they determined that there's going to be 350,000 acre feet of water that they're not going to be able to store. And I'm thinking, what are we, chop liver, something like that? We're a key facility for the coastal watersheds to store a lot of that water that they would just simply dump into the ocean if we don't take it. I mentioned this to Mike, and he says, yes, we talked to Metropolitan, and so far, you know, we haven't gotten any positive response. We should get a discount on the water because we have plenty of stores that we can do. I was kind of heartened on Tuesday, the subcommittees with Metropolitan, Carl Suckle brought this up. And he said, Brad Coffey says, you were going to be meeting with all the groundwater agencies on June 28th, where supposedly that they'll, you know, look at options that they can provide and get water to. They said the same thing again, like 4 years ago when we had a wet year, and they came up with the site storage, and the process was set up for the general manager to approve, but he didn't do anything. I hope that they don't do anything, that they do something this time. And we're the most available, I'd say, agency that can take advantage of this water before they lose it. So I wish you luck, and I hope we can press MODOC and Metropolitan to cut us a deal that would be a benefit to the region. Thank you.
Okay. Any other directors' announcements or reports?
20 seconds. I want to thank Director Seichel for his work.
I pointed out to both Erdman and Seichel, had I not said anything, they may not have said anything.
That's wheeling question.
It's a 200. We really need to use the pipeline. We should do similar activity with our groundwater. Charge $368 access the $166 per acre foot power. So that's like around 5 foot.
Interesting point. Mr. General Manager, any announcements or reports?
Nothing to report.
With that, we are adjourned.